Some Uyghurs live in the United States, and although their numbers remain small, they are politically active. Joining me now is Alim Saitov, General Secretary of the Uyghur American Association in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
How many Uyghurs are living in the United States?
It's a little bit over 1,000 Uyghurs. We are a very small community in this country.
And mostly in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, mostly living in the greater Washington, D.C. area.
How have most of them gotten here? Have they come here for political asylum?
Yes, and a lot of them came to the United States as students, and some of them came to this great nation as asylum seekers. And since Washington, D.C. is a political capital of not only the United States, but of the world, so most Uyghurs come here to promote our cause.
So they are doing more than just trying to establish lives in this country. They're actually trying to affect policy, political policy?
Yes, and a lot of Uyghurs, they come here, then they settle down here, then they start their own living. Then most of the Uyghurs in this country, they're very concerned with the human rights violations of the Uyghur people under the authoritarian rule of the Chinese government. So they all want to do something, contribute something, so that they could affect the change, what's happening in their homeland. So that's why they're all very active.
Do you find that American government officials are willing to learn about what's happening to the Uyghurs in China? Or
yes.
Do anything about it? Because our relations with China are pretty good right now, aren't they?
In a way, yes. But the U.S. Government officials, they're very receptive. They're willing to listen to our cares and concerns. And we get a lot of support from them because they are genuinely interested in the human rights situation of the Uyghur people, the Tibetans, Falun Gong, all the other groups of people whose human rights have been grossly violated by the Chinese government. So they do care and they do listen, and we do get support from them. We certainly really appreciate that.
Well, the Chinese government has branded Uyghurs as terrorists, especially after 9/11, they stepped up the campaign. Doesn't that make it more difficult for you in this country?
In a way, maybe, but not really, because the Chinese government after 9/11 basically saw September 11 as a perfect opportunity to once for all just crack down on the Uyghurs, label all the Uyghur groups, no matter how legitimate and peaceful they may be, as terrorist groups, because Uyghur people believe in Islam. So China used that as an opportunity to crack down, then labeled a lot of groups as terrorists, a lot of individuals as terrorists. But as a matter of fact, because the Chinese government did not present any kind of substantial evidence to back up its claims, so actually right now the human rights in China, which Sharon Holm you just interviewed, and Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, U.S. State Department, European Union, all these countries have their and organizations have reports to prove that China is actually making all this unsubstantiated claims and using the war against terror to crack down on the Uyghurs. So the international community is not buying Chinese claims.
You're the General Secretary of the Uyghur American Association. Your president, Rabia Kadir, is a former political prisoner, isn't she?
Yes, Ms. Rabia Kadir was imprisoned by the Chinese government for nearly 6 years, from 1999 until March 2005, for so-called leaking state secrets. At that time, before her arrest, actually, she was hoping to meet with a member of the U.S. congressional delegation to brief her about the human rights conditions of the Uyghur people. So the Chinese government was not very happy with her, arrested her under a bogus charge, and sentenced her to 8 years. Then because of intense international pressure, U.S., European Union, and human rights group pressures, finally China decided to let her go, basically on medical parole basis.
Do you think it's likely that we'll see an independent republic? Is that what you would like?
That may be possible, because when we look at the Soviet Union, once people thought the Soviet Union was such a powerful country that it would last forever. But the thing is, we saw what happened in 1991, that powerful country, authoritarian country, just collapsed in a couple of days and broke to 16 parts. And most of the parts occupied by the Tsarist Russians, later the Soviets, became today, we see them becoming independent states.
But not Chechnya, and to some degree, I see certain similarities between the Uyghur situation and the Chechen situation, although with a lot less violence, of course. Don't you?
Actually, the violence in our country cannot be compared to the violence in Chechnya.
Yes.
There is almost little or no violence at all in East Turkestan today, which the Chinese government called Xinjiang, of course, which means new territory. And the Chinese media has been playing such a huge role in exaggerating small isolated incidents to prove that there is a terrorist threat from the Uyghur group.
Could you go back to East Turkestan?
Yes.
So you're less likely to be arrested than some other people who have returned?
What's the question again? Sorry.
We've seen people return home with American passports.
Right.
But then they're arrested anyway. Would it be possible for you to return to your home without any fear of being arrested?
You mean me personally?
Yes, you.
If I return, I'd be executed by the Chinese government, probably as a violent terrorist. Although I'm doing most peaceful work here in the United States, the Chinese government basically considers Mr. Abiy Kadir, who is the president of this organization, as a terrorist. She is a mother of 11 children, and she's a woman, and she's a very peaceful woman. She has been peacefully campaigning for the human rights of the Uyghur people since she was released to the United States in 2005. But Chinese government even considers her a terrorist. So there is no way for me or for her or for any other Uyghur activist, either in the United States, Canada, Europe, or anywhere, to go back home safely. It doesn't matter what passport we hold.
Should I assume that you speak Uyghur, Mandarin, and English?
Yes, I do speak all three languages.
What was your experience with cultural assimilation? Did you feel pressured to abandon the culture and the religion?
No, actually, we believe we are always Uyghurs, and in terms of our culture, language, religion, we are a completely separate group. Just as separate as Tibetans from the Chinese, we are as separate from the Chinese just as the Tibetans. We are an ethnic Turkic Muslim people. And our culture, our religion is completely different from the Chinese culture and Chinese religious beliefs. But the thing is, since the Chinese government controlled the country and imposed Chinese culture, beliefs, everything upon us and forced us to become culturally Chinese, the Uyghur people, since that's not part of our culture, and historically we lived side by side with them as neighbors, not the subjugated nation. So we don't feel we should accept their culture. We want to preserve our own culture, language, religion, and live within that. We don't feel comfortable being assimilated into the Chinese culture. But that's the exact intention of the Chinese government, so that by forcing Uyghurs to give up their language, their religion, their culture, and by speaking Chinese language, adopting Chinese cultures, and culturally assimilating into Chinese nation.
Are there any Uyghur restaurants in the United States yet?
Actually, there are like two or three in New York, but not in Washington, D.C. We're hoping to have one, hopefully, sometime this or next year.
Thank you so much for talking with us. Alim Saitov, who is the General Secretary of the Uyghur American Association in Washington, D.C., but he has to come to New York to eat Uyghur food, at least in a restaurant. Thank you for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.